Hello again. Welcome to another episode of Americans for Prosperity West Virginia's Mountaineer Minute. I'm your host and Americans for Prosperity West Virginia State Director, Jason Huffman. On today's episode, we will talk with attorney and former State Senate General Counsel, Richie Heath, about President Trump's extremely qualified nominee for the Supreme Court of the United States, Brett Kavanaugh. With that, let's dive in. So welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Americans for Prosperity West Virginia Mountaineer Minute. With us today is Richie Heath. He is the former State Senate General Counsel and attorney here in Charleston, West Virginia. Richie, thanks for being on with us today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. So Richie and I go way back. We work together on several stuff. So we're very collegial, and that's probably going to come out in this. And we like those kind of conversations, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't want to be like uptight conservative guys.
So. No, definitely not.
Well, let's jump right into it. So there's a ton of news coverage about the judicial branch of government right now. And no, I do not mean the impeachments, although that would be an interesting topic to cover eventually when the dust settles. But specifically, I'm talking about United States Supreme Court and President Trump's very highly qualified pick, Brett Kavanaugh. So Justice Kennedy is retired and there's a vacancy on the court. The Senate's working through the confirmation process of Judge Kavanaugh. A lot of folks are saying that he is a jurist in the mold of Neil Gorsuch, who was confirmed and thus far has been a very principled jurist in that, you know, he was really interpreting the law as written. So talk to us a little bit about Judge Kavanaugh and his qualifications and sort of why he's a great pick by President Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, up until a couple weeks ago, all everybody was talking about here in West Virginia was Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court pick, and that's kind of gone to the wayside. You forget that that's still going on, but, you know, he really is. I mean, of any of the picks that President Trump could have done, I mean, Kavanaugh's probably one of the most qualified legal minds in the nation. You know, he's served on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals for 12 years, which is, you know, considered by many to be the nation's second highest court because it is your most direct route to the United States Supreme Court in terms of federal cases.
And yeah, the second highest court in the land. I've heard that term before.
Yeah. And so it obviously gets a lot of traffic. A lot of the most high profile legal challenges, especially on federal laws and issues of great importance, a lot of those funnel through Kavanaugh's court. He's been on there for 12 years. You know, he's really been, you know, not just served on that court, but really been what many coin as a thought leader. I mean, he's had more than, I think, a dozen of his opinions endorsed or arguments adopted by the Supreme Court in later decisions. So you see that a lot of, you know, he's not just a vote in terms of a judge. He's more of one of the types that are really crafting the legal arguments that are being adopted and upheld, you know, all across the nation. You know, his opinions are regularly cited by federal and state courts throughout the nation beyond just being picked up by the Supreme Court. So from that standpoint, I mean, he really has a great body of work. You know, he's got, from a development standpoint, I mean, four of his 49 judicial clerks while he's been the D.C., Circuit Court, 38 of them have gone on to clerk for Supreme Court justices.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he really is, I mean, I'd say on the whole, respected by everyone. And I think you've seen that in the dialogue so far regarding his appointment. There's not really been a whole lot of discussion about whether or not he's qualified to be on the Supreme Court or not. I mean, frankly, the discussion's been totally opposite of that. The discussion's more been about the politics of President Trump getting another, quote, right, judicial conservative on the court than whether or not, you know, Judge Kavanaugh is actually qualified to be on the court. I think nobody questions his qualifications for the court. He's eminently qualified.
And we're going to get to this point in a little bit, but just to touch on, because I think it's important, that the political atmosphere of this is actually kind of improper for the conversation being had by the Senate, right? Because they're not allowed to ask or shouldn't be asking from an ethical perspective how a jurist would rule on anything that might come before the court. So that's sort of a political mirage in my mind, if you will, of people trying to dodge the fact that Judge Kavanaugh is just so qualified across the spectrum.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, judicial appointments as a whole have really transitioned more from a, you know, what was traditionally a qualifications type process to a political process. And that really is kind of the quandary here is you want judges to be fair arbiters of issues. You don't want them to be predisposed to rule a certain way. And we see that both with the U.S. Supreme Court and at a state level. While we elect our judges here in West Virginia, you see when they're running, they can't make commitments on how they would rule in a certain manner. And they have to be overly cautious in terms of, you know, campaign statements or promises they make that could even be interpreted of how they would rule. And from the political realm that you see in D.C., everybody's, you know, issue of importance, they want the judicial candidates to say, well, I'm, you know, I have this litmus test on this issue, or yes, I would come down on this side of the issue. And they just can't do that, from a judicial fairness standpoint, and then B, you know, ever since the Bork confirmation process, you're mm-hmm. just not going to have, you know, you've seen judges retreat into where they're not going to give any sort of answers whatsoever on specific issues that are coming before the court.
Right. And I mean, at the end of the day, they shouldn't.
Yeah.
And so that brings us a perfect segue to our next sort of topic here. The elephant in the room, especially for Americans for Prosperity activists, a lot of people that are watching this issue, what is Senator Manchin going to do? I mean, you've seen Shelley Moore Capito come out almost immediately and say, you know, I support the president's nominee. Judge Kavanaugh is again, eminently qualified. Yeah. And on the other hand, you know, again, with the political rhetoric we've seen from folks like Elizabeth Warren and Chuck Schumer, Politico, I think, broke the story maybe last week that, you know, Schumer's marching orders essentially to the folks in the Democrat side of the aisle in D.C. has been, don't tell anyone how you're going to vote on Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Because I think their strategy per that story was sort of to peel off some conservative votes and try to deny the president's nominee.
Yeah, and that kind of plays into this where this has really moved from a what you would think is a true confirmation process where you're trying to judge the qualifications of the person, determine if they're qualified for the appointment. There's no question that Judge Kavanaugh is qualified to serve on the Supreme Court. If he's not qualified, then nobody's qualified. So you really do is it's now more of a staking out of your political game positions to get what your end game is, because I think even, you know, shy of a couple votes surprisingly flipping, you know, the other way, I think everybody realizes that he's probably got the support to be confirmed at this point. So it's, you know, staking out positions, try to claim victories here and there. You know, we've seen from Manchin's perspective, he's made this all about the healthcare case that's currently up pending before the court. Obviously, it would be wholly inappropriate for Judge Kavanaugh to say how he would rule on that case. I mean, he can't say that, but, you know, Manchin has couched things in terms of, well, I want to know how he's going to be on these healthcare type issues that affect West Virginia so much. And I think what you'll see is he'll go through the process. He's met with Kavanaugh once. He plans to meet with him again after the confirmation.
Right. To the senator's credit, he did sit down with Judge Kavanaugh.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, what Manchin will hang his hat on is he'll say, look, I've met with Judge Kavanaugh. Like everybody's been saying, Judge Kavanaugh is a principal jurist who has said that his job's to interpret the law.
And Manchin's already echoed that sentiment.
Yes, and he has echoed that sentiment. And so, you know, that will give Manchin enough cover that Kavanaugh is going to interpret the law, and Manchin views that law that's up before the court is good law, so he can in good mind support Judge Kavanaugh. But until then, they will, of course, go through the political processes that we always do in Washington and have this play out and you know, milk it news cycle after news cycle. Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's really hard, especially for Senator Manchin's perspective, it's really hard to vote against Judge Kavanaugh because, A, he is eminently qualified. I mean, right. There's no question that he's not qualified. And then, B, he has also, you know, judges are supposed to rule and interpret the law. So it's kind of awkward to say they have been good for a certain state or what. But
sure.
But Judge Kavanaugh, especially his philosophy in terms of reigning in the administrative state and not letting unchecked bureaucracies just continue with this federal overreach that we've seen firsthand here in West Virginia. I mean, his body of law and decisions on these type cases have perfectly aligned in terms of what West Virginians have been saying for the last 8 years,
right.
Which is, you know, the EPA, all these other administrative agencies that have literally come down and destroyed our economy through the administrative policies that they've enacted,
right.
with no checks or balances.
Or government picking winners and losers outside, again, coming back to what is in statute and should be allowed by those agencies in terms of their ability to dictate.
And Kavanaugh has literally been front and center on some of these major cases, these major EPA cases, natural gas cases, all sorts of cases that literally are decisions that have finally and ultimately benefited West Virginia as we're trying to turn things around here. And it would be really hard for Senator Manchin, I think, to say, okay, you're qualified and your judicial philosophy has shown that you will not tolerate these continued actions from Washington, D.C., that harm, you know, certain state economic interests just based
beyond
on picking
the pale of statute.
Winners and losers. And so I think at the end of the day, when you take those two, I mean, he has no choice but to vote yes. It's
right.
Just as we go through the Washington process, you know.
Oh, yeah. And there's some polling on this, right? I think, what was the number? 55% of West Virginians support the president's
A strong majority of West Virginians support Kavanaugh, and they've had polling out there that show that if Manchin supports Kavanaugh, his polling goes incredibly up in terms of support of West Virginians.
So you've got a ideological sort of balance in Judge Kavanaugh in that he will defend the Constitution. He's proven that. He will interpret the laws written and not legislate from the bench. So you've checked that box. And we're sitting in Senator Manchin's shoes for a second.
Yeah.
There's a political advantageousness to it as well. What is he waiting on? I mean, in my mind, if I'm Senator Manchin, I come out tomorrow and say, yeah, Judge Kavanaugh is my guy.
Yeah.
We are going to get this confirmation done. I guess, you know, tell me your opinion. Do you think that he's maybe playing a little bit of political gamesmanship with what is tantamount to folks' constitutional rights?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Senator Manchin's a very smart politician, and he's, you know, he's going through the motions of being diligent in his decision-making process, but he knows full well, having been one of those key swing votes up in Washington, D.C., that whenever these big issues come up, Manchin is one of a handful of senators that everybody looks at and says, okay, how's Joe going to vote on this? He's one of the key swing votes in play.
And that's why all eyes are on him now.
And all eyes are on him, and that's beneficial for him to get to talk about the importance of this healthcare decision, which is important to him. So while he might not be able to get Judge Kavanaugh to take a position on that, the more that he plays this out, the more he gets to talk about that issue of its importance and the impact that it has on West Virginia. And also to be at the center of this when, you know, you have the Trump administration who's not unfamiliar with going after Senator Manchin.
Sure.
Now, as this is playing out and they're making sure that they have the votes for Kavanaugh, there's an incentive the longer this takes that they, you know, sort of possibly let up on him and not take shots at him for fear of turning him the other way. And you know, as we've got an election year going on right now, it's, you know, Manchin gets to show that, look, I'm listening to everybody. I know there's concerns from my party about Judge Kavanaugh's appointment. I'm listening to those concerns as well and taking everybody's thoughts and considerations into this as I'm making mm-hmm. decisions. So he's, you know, smartly covering all his bases here, and he gets a lot of attention out of it. And I mean, everybody's talking about, you know, what's Senator Manchin going to do on the Capitol.
I mean, it sounds a lot like political posturing, which is, you know, that's what happens in D.C.
Oh, yeah.
And I think
that's about all that happens there.
Right. But I think the slippery slope for the senator is essentially, you know, I think that, and I know a lot of our activists have this sentiment, you know, Senator Manchin's on the fence, he's fence riding. It's typical Senator Manchin not coming down on an issue one way or the other. And
yeah.
I think a lot of people that are in West Virginia and value the Constitution and making sure that founding document is its integrity is ensured by a principled jurist, they're maybe getting a little fed up.
Well, and it's funny because, I mean, I think if you ask it, you know, anybody, I think anybody you ask that has some sort of knowledge on this or who's followed the process, I mean, I think everybody there, I don't think there's a person that you ask that says, oh, yeah, Joe might vote no or Joe might do
right.
this. And so I think, maybe it's part of our cynicism, but I think everybody knows that how the process is going to go and that he's eventually going to go vote yes. But this is, you know, one of those issues where he's going to ride that until the end. And, you know, you've kind of seen this, you know, this analysis from folks as these big issues pop up, you know, with, you know, everybody's wondering with the tax reform, how he's going to vote when you get the immigration reform come up or this and that. You know, obviously he's one of those key votes. And, you know, depending on where everybody's at and what the situation is, you know, people kind of expect and have an ability to kind of peg, well, he went no on this one, he's got to go yes on this.
Right. Well, just like, you know, he voted for Neil Gorsuch.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And he was, and, you know, from that perspective of talking about, you know, positioning himself politically, you know, Manchin was the first Democrat to come out in favor of Gorsuch.
Right.
And he's also got that opportunity here. And I wouldn't be surprised if he played this up as being, coming out and being the first, to support Kavanaugh. And then he will get a ton of press and, accolades from folks for him
and
being bipartisan.
We would be the first organization to stand up and applaud Senator Manchin for doing the right thing on Judge Kavanaugh. And I think that's an interesting point that I think is somewhat missing in the discussion.
And I think you're right. I think everybody is, you know, the way things have gone in Washington in recent years, there is a sense of everybody kind of realizes this all now, and they realize it's a game. And it's like, okay, do we really have to go through all this? Like, I mean, you know, we're literally talking about, you know, a multi-month process for somebody who's imminently qualified that nobody has really highlighted any problems with. I mean, there's not been, you know, it's not like anybody has pointed out any awful opinions that are just devoid of law and reason or anything like this. I mean, we're really talking about in terms of criticism of Kavanaugh. That's not just straight, I don't agree with his philosophy. It's really, you know, stretching to, you know, he spends too much money on baseball and has credit card bills and things like that.
How ridiculous is that?
Yeah.
You know, the average West Virginian is sitting out there saying, you know, am I a bad person because I have some credit card?
I mean, something that has nothing whatsoever to do with their ability to be on the Supreme Court, and then B, I mean, really is at that point you're really stretching it pretty thin. But that's, I mean, we're going to have all that, and then they'll go through the confirmation hearing process, and, you know, as we see with Washington all the time, you know, 85% of the questions will not be questions; they will be narratives and signaling on certain issues. And posturing and statements followed by a, don't you agree, Judge Kavanaugh? And then he will, of course, note that he can't take any position on that, but his job is to interpret the law as it is, not to create laws. And you will go through that whole process. And so really, even nowadays, I mean, if you watch any of these confirmation hearings, et cetera, I mean, they're really so uneventful because, I mean, the judicial candidates can't take any positions unless they have something in their background that was really, truly questionable and they have to defend or discuss, or you have, you know, a scenario such as what happened with Justice Thomas and that. I mean, there's really, other than that, when they're asking questions in these confirmation processes about the judges and their records and this and that, I mean, it's really, you know, trying to feel them out on positions or philosophy or statements that they have made, and that's it.
One of the questions that West Virginians want to know is, are you going to defend the Constitution or not? And the answer is yes. So I think the hearings are scheduled for September, at least.
Yeah, September 4th.
So all eyes are peeled. We got a couple of minutes left. I want to change topics a little bit, but, you know, all eyes on Senator Manchin, right? So I know that our activists are going to keep the pressure up, and a lot of folks are as well. So let's hope he steps up and does the right thing. Your previous job, you were the general counsel for the state Senate.
Yes.
At a pretty historic time when Republicans had brought the majority back to Republican control for the first time in, what, about a century?
Yeah, 83 years.
So nobody alive knew what a Republican administration looked like from an administrative standpoint. So that you were kind of, you know, head guy in charge of counsel stuff on the Senate side. That had to be a pretty daunting task. Tell us some of the experience there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was definitely interesting times. I mean, as you said, first time anybody had been in that position in 83 years. And thus, you know, really from a legislative perspective, anytime, you know, any of the folks associated with either the current House of Delegates leadership or the state Senate leadership had you know, involvement in terms of being able to, you know, basically run the legislature and deal with the things that you have to do with that. So you're literally, I mean, starting from square one and getting up to speed. And, you know, to top that off, you know, the way West Virginia's election cycle works, I mean, the elections took place in November, and then your special session starts the second week, first Wednesday of January. So you literally had a month and a half period to basically transition and get everything ready for a legislative session, and you know, which is particularly awkward when you know the you're not officially in charge until the start of the session.
Oh wow, I never even thought about that.
I mean, it was, you know, obviously having then President Cole was a legislator, so he was in the legislature, and that allowed us to transition and work with former President Jeff Kessler and do things like that. But you, I mean, you literally, the president isn't elected until the first day of session. So you literally would have this weird scenario where for a month and a half, you are preparing for the start of legislative session when you're not actually officially in the majority and doing anything from that perspective.
But you guys obviously got your ducks in a row because there was a lot of historic policy passed.
Yeah, we had
a lot of it in a bipartisan fashion, actually.
Yeah, no, the first year, I mean, that's a lot of that is lost. You know, in the first year we passed, you know, a lot of significant measures, you know, more than a dozen tort reforms that most of which had bipartisan support. A number of other key measures, and especially, you know, in the Senate. I mean, we had, if you looked at the Senate before we took over, you know, there was a sort of a split from the Democratic Party where you had a block of eight or nine, you know, business conservative type Democrats. And so, I mean, most of our votes in the Senate were not on party lines. And that was, we had, as you recall, we only had an 18 to 16 majority.
Right.
So, you know, there were only, you know, a handful of instances for those 2 years where we came down to, you know, 18, 16 votes, sometimes on some of the key issues like right to work and things like that.
Well, and it's always heartening to see, you know, politicians kind of drop the partisan guard and be able to work together on something that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of that occurred and has recently in the legislature. And I think it's, you know, always good for people to maybe see that. It doesn't often kind of get swept under the rug on the more controversial issues, but...
Yeah, I mean, obviously in Washington we see a lot of the gridlock and the trouble on major votes and this and that, but when you look at our legislature as a state legislature and having a limited 60-day window, I mean, the vast majority of the issues, I mean, overwhelming 85-90% of issues that come through the legislature are usually, you know, there's strong bipartisan, if not unanimous, support for. It really boils down to that kind of 5 to 10%, those key big ticket agenda items where, you know, it gets a little more nuanced, you get a little more of the debate and the partisan bickering and a little closer vote totals. But, you know, on the whole, I think the legislature obviously is a much more efficient bipartisan West Virginia than it is in Washington.
Definitely. That's an understatement. Well, that's about all the time we have time for today. But hey, appreciate you being on the show
thanks
again.
For having me.
Yeah, thanks for sitting down and talking with us. I hope to have you get back sometime.
Absolutely.
Thanks everybody for listening today. And this has been Americans for Prosperity, West Virginia Mountaineer Minute. And remember that no one's coming to help. It's all up to us. Thanks again.